Hey there, I want to tell y'all about a podcast that I love. Crime is so commonplace that it takes something particularly shocking and horrifying to be labeled the crime of the century. Even so, many of these crimes have been forgotten or lost to history. Crimes of the Centuries is a new true crime podcast from award-winning reporter Amber Hunt and the Obsessed Network. Each week, Amber takes a deep dive into one of these crimes, telling forgotten true crime tales that you've likely never heard before. Now, if you're not familiar with Amber Hunt's work, you should be. We've been fans of hers for a while now. Episodes of Crimes of the Centuries include a 220-year-old murder that brought together Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr as lawyers for the defense. Also, Jazz Age thrill killers, a murdering grandmother, serial killers you've never heard of, and so many more. Crimes of the Centuries rediscovers the true crime stories that shocked the nation. Cases so unbelievable that we thought we'd never forget them, but somehow did. Until now. Hear these stories right now by finding and subscribing to Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Oak Cliff is one of the oldest neighborhoods in the city of Dallas, Texas. In fact, prior to 1903, when Oak Cliff was annexed by the bustling city, it was its own town. Its name derived, an early advertisement attempting to lure folks to the community says, from the massive oaks that crown the soft green cliffs. When Dallas got a hold of the place, they sought to make it into something of a resort town. In 1906, Lake Cliff was completed, a Coney Island-style amusement park with a roller coaster, skating rink, and large theater, among other attractions. It lasted only a little over 6 years. But still, Oak Cliff continued to grow and was especially sought after by those who liked the big city life, but didn't necessarily want to live in it. To this day, Oak Cliff retains at least some of its autonomy, even as it has grown from a modest town of a few thousand residents in the early 20th century to a heavily populated suburban outlier of the big city. There are around 75,000 living in the area today. Oak Cliff is, without a doubt, its own place, and the fact is evident not only by its denizens' friendly and welcoming attitude, markedly more so than many neighborhoods in Dallas, but physically, and especially in its small downtown area, Oak Cliff just feels separate from the metropolitan giant that swallowed it up over 100 years ago. Just ask anyone who was born and raised there where they're from. They're likely to say Oak Cliff, not Dallas. Located a few miles southwest from the heart of downtown Dallas, Oak Cliff has a rich history. Perhaps the suburb is best known, however unfortunate, as the place where, on November 22, 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald shot and killed Dallas policeman J.D. Tippit, allegedly, after fleeing from the scene of the other crime he'd allegedly just committed, the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy in downtown Dallas. Oswald then slipped into a showing of the film War is Hell at Oak Cliff's Texas Theater, where he was apprehended by the Dallas police shortly thereafter. As Oak Cliff grew from a quaint and quiet small town into an officially annexed neighborhood of the city of Dallas, and then into a heavily populated suburban outlier, crime too, of course, rose. Following right alongside Dallas, the violent crime rate in Oak Cliff blasted off in the early 1970s and continued to rise into the early 1990s before steadily tapering off, continuing to decline year after year thereafter in most cases, though trends for the last few years have shown that the number is once again on the rise. Regardless, in 2014, the murder rate in Dallas was at its lowest since 1965. That was a good thing, something to be proud of for the city, But for those who lost loved ones to violence that year, that decrease, those statistics, weren't felt. The numbers are abstract. It's the pain that is tangible. When a loved one's life is taken and the individual responsible escapes justice, that wound does not mend. Such is the case in the brutal and unthinkable murder of expectant mother Delisa Kelly in March of 2014.
Actually did it. I don't want no death penalty. No, I don't. I want him to suffer. I need us to be on the same page. I need him to feel the same hurt I'm feeling. I need him to feel that every breathing moment. Because my grandson is sitting there now. He don't have a mother.
Delisa Michelle Kelly was born to LaShondra Kelly on July 24, 1989, in Dallas. She grew up in the Oak Cliff area most of her childhood, with her mother and two younger sisters, Jasmine and LaShawn. When in junior high school, Delisa became fast friends with a girl named Kiara, or Kiki, as she was most often and affectionately known. Delisa and Kiki developed a tight bond that, like every relationship, had its ups and downs, but the two always found their way back to one another. In the middle of high school, Delisa moved to North Dallas. She didn't have a problem making new friends at her new school and in her new neighborhood. Though her main goal when finding new friends or just hanging around ones she already had was to make them laugh, she was a sincerely loving and genuine individual who often helped folks work through hard times and their own struggles, her mother, LaShondra, told us.
She was a loving person, very caring. Just about anybody that she ran into, you know, they would have possibly a different story about how she helped them or was there to listen, you know, for them to vent or gave them something that she really didn't have to give. That was Lisa. That was her personality.
Since her grandmother, Margarita, still lived in Oak Cliff, though, Delisa spent plenty of time there, not only with her grandmother, but also hanging around her childhood friends, especially Kiki. Through the move to a new area and the unavoidable growing pains of transitioning from a teenager to an adult, the close bond Delisa shared with her mother, sisters, and grandmother was, perhaps, what held everything together. LaShondra was young when she gave birth to Delisa, so in a way, they did at least some growing up together, and in doing so, the mother and daughter fostered a unique relationship. They were best friends. Delisa and her sisters, too, were thick as thieves, her mother says.
Well, all of them were really tight. You know, they had a bond that was out of this world. They would protect each other. Mom is the word. Like, if one of them do something and they didn't want nobody to know, no one was going to know.
On March 4th, 2012, 22-year-old Delisa Kelly gave birth to a beautiful baby boy who she named Dunye, the same name her best friend Kiki gave her little boy, who was around 2 years old at the time. Delisa had never been a problem child necessarily, and when she became an adult, she didn't party any more than the average young person trying to navigate their way through that difficult time. But, her mother LaShondra told me, Delisa was always on the go before becoming a mother. When Dunye was born, though, all that was over, and a markedly different Delisa, too, was born. She loved motherhood and made damn sure Dunye never wanted for anything, with a little help, of course, from her mother and grandmother. Delisa showered her new boy with love and attention and rarely left his side. She was not the type who looked for a babysitter so she could go out with friends. In fact, Lashandra told me that she had to practically beg Delisa to let her new grandbaby come stay at Grandma's house. And when Dunye did stay, Delisa was sure to call multiple times to check up on him. Motherhood looked good on Delisa. She took it seriously. Sometime around late 2012 or early 2013, Delisa Kelly began a relationship with a man who she'd known since junior high. Delisa's relationship with this man moved fast, and by early 2014, the couple was engaged and living together. Now, Delisa's family wasn't crazy about her new fiancé. The man was more than just overprotective. He was overbearing and extremely jealous. Delisa's fiancé seemed to be purposefully pushing her to alienate her family.
In the whole time that he and my daughter knew each other, he was very overprotective, very insecure. He was the type of person, once he found out that who he, you know, he's going to ask four or five times, who's that? Who is that on the phone? Who are you talking to? Who is that? And she'd say something like, dang, this is my mama. Chill out. He would still be pissed. I've been at work all day. You could have done talked to your mama out there. I'm like, don't he understand the same way he work, I work too? Creep me out. Like, and I used to tell my daughter all the time, miss something about that boy. I'm not going to say I don't like him, but oh, he was so creepy. He gives you an evil look no matter what time of the day it is. Even when he's speaking to you, he has this frown, this intimidating look. He didn't intimidate me at all. I was not afraid of him at all, period. And I let him know. Baby, we smile around here. We hug around here. We're loving and caring around here. Or if he did say, hi, mama, it's with an attitude. Hi, mama. And I never told him to call me mama no way.
Lashandra noticed a gradual change in Delisa since her relationship with this man began. Before, she was incredibly outspoken and independent, and Delisa was always cutting up and laughing, always jovial. But as she got deeper into this relationship, something had changed. Delisa seemed to be carrying a heavy weight on her shoulders. She'd become burdened. As if Delisa wasn't weighed down enough by her fiancé's jealousy and control, a terrible tragedy that occurred in late February of 2014 only exacerbated the young mother's burden. On Thursday, February 27th, 2014, Delisa's childhood friend, her best friend, Kiki, was a passenger in a car making a left turn onto Prairie Creek Road in Dallas, when an SUV ran a red light and struck the vehicle. Kiki was taken to an area hospital where she died from her injuries. Delisa was devastated. She and Kiki had just made up after what was probably their longest fallout. Her grief and pain hit hard. The Wednesday after her best friend died, Delisa's mother, Lashandra, took her to a doctor's appointment. Delisa, now 24 years old, was 2 months pregnant with a baby girl, and the appointment was a standard prenatal checkup. She was excited about giving little Dunye a sibling to grow up with. Delisa decided to stay over at her mom's for a couple days. Like old times, the two laid around on the couch and watched their favorite old movies, along with some they hadn't yet seen. Delisa, who wanted to be a chef, cooked for Lashandra some, like she did when she was pregnant with Dunye. When I spoke with Lashandra, she lit up remembering her daughter's culinary skills and the 40 pounds she gained right alongside her pregnant daughter, who was constantly creating dishes like shrimp Alfredo and seared salmon. During the visit, the mother and daughter talked a lot and laughed a lot, something Delisa no doubt needed. This is sheer speculation on my part, but something I wholeheartedly believe. Having just lost her best friend, Delisa needed love and support more than ever, and she likely wasn't getting that at the home she shared with her fiancé. The visit with her mother that Wednesday and Thursday was just what Zalisa needed. Those couple days, some heavy topics came up. Things that in hindsight seemed particularly relevant to the unfortunate events that fate had in store for young mother Delisa Kelly. While visiting her mother on Wednesday and Thursday, March 5th and 6th, 2014, Delisa Kelly was getting the emotional support she needed after losing her best friend, Kiki, to an automobile accident the week prior. Delisa and LaChandra were close, and the visit had them rekindling their love for watching movies, talking with one another, and cutting up. But there was some less than lighthearted conversation as well. Delisa told her mother about a dream she'd had where her deceased grandmother was pleading with her to not get in the blue car. She wasn't sure what the dream meant, but it was bothering her. Likely, LaChandra and Delisa brushed it off and didn't think about it too much. What was important to LaChandra this visit in particular was to address the heavy weight she knew her daughter had on her shoulders. The weight that seemed to grow heavier and heavier as Delisa's relationship with her new fiancé deepened.
I could tell that there was something wrong with her. So I grabbed her by the shoulders and I was like, there's nothing that you can't tell me. And right now you don't look happy. I'm not seeing the same person that first got engaged. Tell me what's wrong. Is he beating you? What? I can already see the insecurities and the jealousy. I mean, how far does this go? And she was like, I'm taking care of it now, Mom. Don't worry. I'm taking care of it right now. I'll be able to talk to you about it more once I make my move. That was the last time we talked about it.
It's difficult to read anything else from Delisa's response to LaChandra other than that she was planning to leave her fiancé. That night, Delisa's fiancé picked her up at around 10:30 or 11. The next day, Friday, March 7th, was Kiki's wake. Delisa's grandmother, Margarita, picked her up early in the day to take her to another doctor's appointment, and after that, they returned to Margarita's house. She planned to get ready for Kiki's viewing and had written a poem she was going to read before placing it in her best friend's casket. The poem, LaChandra told me, was beautiful, a loving tribute to Kiki. LaChandra said she had no idea her daughter could write poetry so elegantly until Delisa showed it to her during their visit. Beginning at around 4:30 p.m., Delisa began making calls to friends, trying to catch a ride to her best friend's wake. As 6 o'clock approached, which was when the visitation was scheduled to start, Delisa wasn't having any luck. Little Danye had just gone down for a nap, so when Margarita offered to give her a ride to the funeral home, Delisa declined. The toddler was sick and hadn't been sleeping well, so disturbing Dunye's nap was the last thing Delisa wanted to do.
And my mom kept offering to take her, but my grandson was sick. He was sick, and he hadn't been sleeping, she had just gotten to sleep. So she didn't want to wake him. They would have to wake him and put him in his car seat.
It was already pushing 6 p.m. and Kiki's visitation was about to begin, so taking a bus wasn't an option since Delisa would have had to take at least one bus transfer to get there. That would make her even later than she already was. Since Delisa had grown up in the neighborhood and knew a ton of folks there, she figured it wouldn't be too hard to catch a ride if she started out on foot. She left her grandmother's house on Prosperity Avenue and started walking while calling friends on her cell phone and keeping an eye out for people she knew.
Okay, so after she called, they said she called like 40, made 40 calls. You know, I don't want to say that they all were different people, but they said she made 40 calls. And throughout those 40 calls, she was trying to find a ride to her best friend's wake. So therefore, in her mind, she's saying, I've been in this neighborhood all my life. I know just about everybody. I'm sure I can find a ride out here if I just get out here. And once I get there,
I know everyone there. I'm sure someone will bring me home. I know my daughter, and I know that is the thought she had before she walked out of that door, not knowing that she was about to meet her fate.
A neighbor would later tell police that they observed Delisa walking down the street talking on her phone, and she seemed to be in an argument with whoever was on the other end, they said. At around 6:40 p.m., Delisa unintentionally called her sister Jasmine, pocket dialed her. What Jasmine heard was disturbing. Delisa, she said, was screaming for her life. A male's voice could be heard saying something along the lines of, "Shut up, stop screaming, you want to be hard-headed?" while Delisa pleaded for him to stop, to get off of her. Jasmine heard what sounded like her big sister being repeatedly beaten. The beating and screaming lasted about 1 minute and 11 seconds before everything went quiet. The call cut off, and Jasmine's attempts to call her sister back went unanswered. At 6:51 p.m., Jasmine got a text from Delisa's phone that read, "Call you in a minute." Then, at 6:53, Jasmine texted back, "What's going on? Was he hitting you? Because I heard screaming, him telling you to be quiet, and you telling him to stop." The "he" Jasmine was referring to in this text exchange, presumably, was Delisa's fiancé. Immediately, a text came back from Delisa's phone, also at 6:53, stating that he thought she was with another man. At 6:56 p.m., Jasmine shot back a text asking her sister what he did to her. She never heard back. Panicked and sure something terrible had happened to Delisa, Jasmine began calling her mother, grandmother, and sister, LaShawn. No one had heard from Delisa, and they all started calling her phone. All the calls went straight to voicemail. Delisa's family never heard from her again. After an accidental call from Delisa Kelly to her sister Jasmine, in which a male's voice, what sounded like a beating, and Delisa's screamed pleas for this male to stop, could be heard, and after a brief text conversation where she told her sister that he thought she was with another man, correspondence from Delisa ceased. Jasmine got no response to her last text to Delisa, and her attempts to call her went unanswered. The calls, in fact, went straight to voicemail, further worrying the sister. Jasmine phoned her and Delisa's grandmother, Margarita, to tell her what was going on. After a little time had gone by and Margarita hadn't heard from her granddaughter, she called 911 to tell them about the screams and apparent beating, and told them that no one could get a hold of Delisa. Margarita was panicking. This is the call she made to 911 at 8:38 p.m. on March 7th, 2014.
Dallas 911, what's the address of your emergency?
I'm at 20 Prosperity Avenue.
What's your apartment, ma'am?
It's a house.
Okay, and you're Crossery, Sunnyvale, and Stanley? What's going on, ma'am? You need police, fire, or ambulance?
I don't know. I need the police, I think.
Tell me what's going on.
My granddaughter left here at 6 o'clock. This evening, she was going to a wedding. Her sister got a call from her about 40 minutes after that. And she was screaming for her life. Somebody was beating her. And we don't know who has her. So I don't know what to do. We can't get her on her cell phone. She's not responding to any messages. So I don't know what to do.
Okay, so she's not responding to no messages at all, nothing like that.
And her phone's going straight to voicemail.
Okay. Okay, so did you want to report her?
Please.
As a missing person?
Yes. Can someone come here?
Yes, we can have someone go out there. What What is your name?
My name is Marjorita.
Marjorita?
M-A-R-J-U-R-I-T-A. Last name Kelly.
Okay, and what is your...
My granddaughter's name
is
Delisa. D-apostrophe-L-I-S-A. Last name Kelly.
Okay, how old is she?
She's 24.
Okay. And is she black, white, Hispanic?
Black.
What was the last thing you saw her wearing? What color shirt? What color bottom?
She had on a leopard print pants, a black shirt, and a denim vest.
Okay. Okay, and do you know if she's diagnosed with any mental or physical disabilities?
Does she have disabilities? Is that what you asked?
Yes, ma'am. Is she diagnosed with anything?
She has no disabilities.
Any medication she's taking?
Just antibiotics for a bladder infection. And she's pregnant.
Okay. And where did she tell you she was going?
Her best friend was killed last Thursday at that wreck at Prairie Creek in Syene. So she was going to her wake over there, Laureland and 30.
Okay.
She's out here walking. I'm assuming she was catching the bus.
Left walking at what time today?
6 p.m.
So she's not answering the phone, but she answered one time to her sister?
Her sister said it sounded like she, you know how you can call somebody without knowing you call somebody, because she said when she saw her sister's name pop on her call ID, she answered the phone, but all she could hear was Lisa screaming, and somebody was hitting her and telling her it was a male voice telling her to shut up. And then we haven't heard from her since. She was screaming for her life. That was the kind of scream she heard.
Okay, and this is your granddaughter?
My granddaughter.
Okay. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and put a call in for police to go out there, okay?
Okay.
They'll be out there shortly. Go ahead and provide them with as much information as you can so they can go ahead and look for her.
Okay, thank you so much.
And if you hear anything from her, please let us know so we can update our officers.
I will.
Okay? Okay, ma'am. We'll be on the way. You're welcome. Okay, bye-bye.
The dispatcher, named Abigail Dominguez, told the frantic grandmother that she would dispatch officers to her home to help her create a missing persons report. But after speaking with her supervisor, Sergeant Kevin Mansell, a move that was a major deviation in protocol, officers were not sent. Here's the correspondence between the dispatcher and her boss, which occurred at 8:43 p.m., immediately following Delisa's grandmother's call to 911. And just to warn you, it's maddening.
Menzel, okay?
Yes?
Menzel, it's me. I have a question. This lady, she really doesn't have a lot of information, but, I mean, she's very, very concerned for her granddaughter. Her granddaughter called her sister, and they haven't seen her, they haven't heard anything from her. She wants to report her as missing, but she called her sister and she was screaming and yelling, telling
her. The granddaughter called the other granddaughter?
Yeah, she called her sister.
Okay, not the grandmother's sister, which would be the girl's aunt.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she told her that she wants, no, she didn't tell her anything. She was just, she's on open line disturbance of a female yelling, screaming. Stop hitting me. And
where does she live?
With her grandma.
Okay, the grandmother called us. Who's calling us?
The grandma. The
grandma's
person
calling
she
us.
With.
And said the grandchild
left.
Hang on one second. Hang on.
911, Okay. You need a sick day tomorrow? Okay. Okay. All right. Get better. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okay, so the granddaughter, they have an open line. They used to, they were having an open line disturbance. They heard the granddaughter being hit by an unknown male.
All right. And does she know where the granddaughter lives or is?
The granddaughter lives with her, but she never came back.
Oh,
she was gonna go to her friend.
Somewhere else. Okay. So we don't know where.
Exactly.
Could be McKinney.
Yeah, could be. So I'm putting her as a missing.
Well,
but I mean, is there anything else we can do?
Yeah.
I mean,
what's the granddaughter's phone number?
I didn't get it, but
we need that, and we can ping the phone, find out where she's at.
Okay. Let me call her back. I'll still send police for her so we can, you know, do a missing or something. Or no?
Not yet. I mean,
until we ping it?
She's not missing because she lives with her, but she just...
Well, she was supposed to come back, though. She told her she was going to
How old is this girl?
She's 24.
Oh, no.
Your granddaughter, but she never goes out missing. And then there's one more thing. She's pregnant.
Well, sound like she's missing before. That's how she got in that situation.
But she's 24. Come on.
All right. Well, give me a phone number, and let's see if we can ping it. And did she think it was they were fighting?
No, she knows they were hitting on her.
Okay.
She's willing to stop.
Okay.
So get that information, then we'll.
Yeah.
I'll tell her to hold on the missing.
Yes.
Okay.
And let me find out if I can find her.
Okay, let me get that for you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
At 8:46 p.m., dispatcher Dominguez phoned Margarita back to get Delisa's cell phone number. Dominguez got it and forwarded the information to her supervisor, Sergeant Mansell, at 8:49. Sergeant Mansell then phoned the cell phone provider and asked the company to ping the phone's location. That was 8:51 p.m. 4 minutes later, at 8:55, a representative of the cell phone provider called the sergeant back and informed him that they could not ping the phone. Location information was unavailable. We'll get back to that later. Sergeant Mansell asked the provider to continue attempts to ping Delisa Kelly's cell phone. However, he never sent officers to Margarita's house to file a missing persons report. Later, when asked why he did not, Sergeant Mansell replied that he simply forgot. The following day, Saturday, March 8, 2014, at 1 p.m., Delisa Kelly's sister called 911 to report her missing. This time, Dallas police officers responded and a want-to-locate report was filed. It had been over 12 hours since Delisa was last seen, something that was incredibly out of character for the young and attentive mother. Delisa was rarely away from Little Dunye that long, since he was born 2 years prior. His second birthday, in fact, was 3 days before his mother went missing. The entire family was in a panic as they waited and hoped for word from Delisa. In the meantime, Delisa's fiancé was reportedly silent. That Saturday evening, while out looking for Delisa, her cousin, with whom she was very close, came across the fiancé at an area bowling alley, in the company of another woman. Delisa's cousin, as can be imagined, was livid. A scene was made, and later, Delisa's fiancé finally acknowledged her disappearance on Facebook. It wasn't until the following Monday, March 10, 2014, that the cell phone provider was able to go forward with their attempts to ping Delisa's phone. When they did, it was too late. The phone likely had been destroyed, though that is not an undisputable fact, since Delisa's cell phone has never been found. Either way, 911 dispatch sergeant Kevin Mansell's failure to act, along with his inappropriate, to say it lightly, and downright maddening handling of Delisa's disappearance when it was phoned in the night of, had hindered this case from the get-go. That Monday, at a little after 12 p.m., a detective and a handful of patrol officers visited Delisa's grandmother. They canvassed the immediate area for clues of which they found none. The Dallas Police Department subsequently contacted the Public Transportation Department to find out if DeLisa had boarded a bus to go to Kiki's wake, and they checked with the funeral home to see if DeLisa had signed the guest book. At 2:06 p.m., they issued a press release on their social media pages asking for the public's assistance in locating the missing mother. This is long after the first 48 hours. At 8 p.m., area hospitals and the Dallas County Medical Examiner's Office were contacted. That produced no new information. On Tuesday, March 11th, 2014, at 3 p.m., a press conference was held concerning the disappearance of DeLisa Kelly. Later that afternoon, family and friends were interviewed, but that line of inquiry produced no results. Again, the medical examiner and local hospitals were contacted, and again, nothing. Both police and fire departments in surrounding jurisdictions were also contacted without anything new gleaned. On Wednesday, March 12, 2014, DeLisa's friends and family created the Facebook page Help Find DeLisa. This day, in fact, turned out to be the most active day concerning police investigation while DeLisa was missing. A subpoena was issued allowing police to obtain DeLisa's cell phone activity log. It isn't known, fully, what Dallas detectives learned from that. Sightings of DeLisa, too, came in that day. Several claimed that she was in the area of Market Center Drive and Oaklawn Avenue in Dallas, in the downtown's northwest. A witness was found when police canvassed the area, who claimed DeLisa had been in the business where she worked the previous morning, Tuesday, in the same leopard print pants in which she was last seen. This witness, a server at a restaurant, told Dallas detectives that DeLisa was crying and talking about going to Arkansas. Nothing, however, came from the supposed sighting. A later report would place DeLisa in a hotel in this same area on that Wednesday night. With these sightings in mind, police checked the Greyhound bus terminal, but nothing came of it. Again, the medical examiner and hospitals were contacted. Nothing new came from that. But what would later turn out to be perhaps the biggest lead in the case came in that day. At 10:47 p.m., Dallas police received a tip from an anonymous caller claiming that they saw DeLisa Kelly at the Stop and Save gas station and convenience store at the corner of Sunnyvale Street and Overton Road between 5:30 and 6 p.m. the previous Friday, March 7th, the night she disappeared. This Stop and Save is about a third of a mile from DeLisa's grandmother Margarita's home on Prosperity Avenue, around a six-minute walk. The next day, Thursday, March 13, 2014, at 3:45 p.m., another anonymous call was received by the Dallas police. This caller, too, told them that they saw DeLisa at the Stop and Save that evening, only at around 6:30. Neither of these anonymous callers would prove correct about the time, but both were very close. At 9 p.m., Dallas police detectives attempted to obtain the store's surveillance video footage, but were unsuccessful at that time, likely because whoever was working just didn't know how to access it. It's unclear exactly when police finally obtained the footage, but when they did, DeLisa Kelly can be seen clear as day entering the convenience store at precisely 6:09 p.m. She's got her phone to her ear. That particular image, that information, it should be noted, was released long after what follows here, which also was not released immediately. And we'll address that when the time comes. At 6:13 p.m., 4 minutes after she entered the Stop and Save, DeLisa is captured on the surveillance cameras outside the convenience store getting into a vehicle, a blue car. We'll continue DeLisa's tragic story and the maddening events surrounding the investigation on the next episode of Gone Cold. If you have any information about the kidnapping and murder of Delisa Michelle Kelly, please contact the Dallas Police Homicide Special Investigations Unit at 214-671-3584. Or if you have information and wish to remain anonymous, please contact the Crime Stoppers hotline at 877-373-8477. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic abuse or violence, please get help before it's too late by calling the National Domestic Abuse Hotline at 800-799-SAFE or 800-799-7233. If you'd like to help find answers for the families of unsolved crime victims from all over, or help identify a Jane or John Doe, please visit DNASolves.com, where you can submit your DNA data from a consumer testing company, such as Ancestry or 23andMe, to their database. We'll provide a link in the show notes. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and for just $2.50, you'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, such as Dr. Dreadful and the House of Horrors, among others. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. It means the world to Erica and I, and we could not do this without you. The Dallas Morning News, The New York Daily News, NBCDFW.com, CBSNews.com, WFAA.com, Fox4News.com, Fox7Austin.com, and MySanAntonio.com were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.